This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of BlockHash, Exploring the Blockchain, episode 367. Today, I have Nathan Lenga, co-founder for Electric, here to talk about their decentralized exchange and their mainnet that's coming up here on Monday. Nathan, welcome to the show, man. Super happy to have you here. It's going to be a real fun conversation. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me. Very excited. I've been looking forward to it for a while. Let's do it.
Yeah, man. It's going to be fun. Before we jump in and everything, I'm sure people are going to be very curious as to who you are and what you do. Mm-hmm. So before we start talking about Electric and what you guys have going on, tell me a bit about yourself. What's your background? What did you do prior to Electric? Did you do stuff within the Web3 space? Is this your first time in Web3? What's your story?
For sure. So I'm lucky enough to have grown up and started my career purely in crypto. So I'm as native, nice, as DeGen, as DeFi native as I can get. My background is development, and I spent a lot of time kind of studying and learning about game theory and applied financial mathematics. I was very lucky when I was younger to play Minecraft early on. And it got to a point where I was, you know, like playing around, getting bored, and like, I can probably make this a bit better. So I learned how to code with command blocks back in the day, if people get that reference. Mm-hmm. I assume most people will, but if not, it was just an interactable way to code onto Minecraft. I'm like, yeah, this is pretty interesting. So I ventured towards, you know, Python and JavaScript and Java, C, C++, and then kind of went a bit crazy and fell down a deep rabbit hole of coding, which was fun for a while until I started at university and they taught me the names of what I was teaching myself, and it got really boring. So I kind of died, like my enthusiasm for coding died around then. But when I was about 2017, I started mining Ethereum after a friend said, oh, start mining Bitcoin. I'm like, nah, it's been around for what, 9 years now, 8 years, sorry, I don't see a point in being late. I might as well try and be early. And at that point, I was also very into, like, I mentioned coding, so I was always looking at how to take like philosophical ideologies and combine it with code, like the coder's law principle. So when I was reading through Ethereum and the vision to be a world computer, it made a lot more sense, combined with the fact that you can, you know, you see all these big data companies growing in Web2, and that they're growing the most because they have the most data, and that's the economy of scale. So to me, I also saw a value in Ethereum storing data of transactions, whatever they happen to be, for whatever smart contracts for institutions in the future. So I sort of saw a value of aligning a fundamental value for a token like Ethereum with a data it had captured. So whereas Bitcoin, I view it as a proof of concept that a distributed decentralized network can work. However, I didn't really get the value of where the currency was coming from apart from the network. I'm not calling it a Ponzi by any means, but I could really trace down a value for Ethereum. So I kind of started mining Ethereum, and at the same time I was quite heavily focusing and studying market making and high frequency trading, because in Australia there's a large HFT firm called Optiva that I wanted to get an internship after uni, but I obviously got a bit sidetracked with crypto. But they are an HFT firm, so I was spending some time learning about market making, inventory, arbitrage, liquidations, all these things. And when I was looking at Ethereum, which in its early stages didn't really have that many DeFi protocols, there was the basic, you know, there was ETH Lend, and now this is like 2018, there's ETH Lend, there's OX, there was, you know, Maker, just the really basic primitives in the ecosystem. And there was the clear fact that there were multiple order books. You know, there weren't really AMMs. Uniswap hadn't come around, but there were versions of AMMs. But there were different order books to trade on, and that kind of created arbitrage. So early on, I started in crypto properly just by building bots and connecting it to my client that I was running my node to capture what eventually became known as MEV. At the time, it wasn't called MEV. It didn't have a name. And I did this for, you know, a good 3 or 4 months, just trialing it out, optimizing it. And then, you know, in 2019, well, just before 2019, you know, in 2019, the Flashbase paper came out about front running the mempool, the paper that created that named MEV. The team were testing it beforehand. So at one point along the journey, I like went from like making a good amount of money to maybe being cut by a tenth of that, you know. And I was like, what's going on? And then eventually I learned that they were testing it and they were doing much better than me because they're much smarter than me. And, you know, my rule in business is don't insert emotion. So I try and remove any ego. And I was like, you know what? I'm not making money here. I'll pivot. And I built up sort of a following on Twitter as an anon. So just writing about things on blockchain and just the problems, the solutions that offered, whatever. So I sort of started offering my services towards people who wanted to build blockchains. So I set up an anon group with about three other people, and we started building blockchains. We built a few layer ones. In the future, we built some dApps and we built a layer two, and it was all good fun and all just experimental to learn more and build a network. But unfortunately, at one point, I almost got doxxed, decided to leave that side of the crypto space, which kind of then resulted in me atrophying all of those networks because I couldn't really say, hey, it's me as Nathan, as my non-account. So anyway, after that, I went to go work for I was in Australia, and I went to go and work at a firm called ZeroCap, and they're the largest crypto native institution in Australia. They did market making, and they did structured products and options, custody, and I ran the innovation team. So we had a research lab, we had consulting for dev projects, for MEV projects. It was good fun, but after a while, I kind of realized that Australia is quite a small economy. It usually trails behind the US and the UK and Europe by about 5 to 10 years. And I have high ambitions and want to make a lot of money. So I realized that Australia wasn't the place for me. Moved to London. Early on in London, I was fortunate enough to meet a team that were working on a fund of funds. I quickly convinced them to try something else. And we've now built a venture studio. And our first project that we're putting all of our time into is Electric. And you can see what the logo on here, which is the first DEX on a new layer 2 network called Lightlink. Yeah.
So what makes Electric different? I know it's on a layer 2, but, you know, in terms of, as far as DEXs go, you know, what makes it stand out? What's different about Electric?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's an interesting principle of in economics called creative destruction, right? Which is that small innovations take place and destroy the previous technology. There's ways to exploit that process that we'll speak about a bit later. But what's unique about Electric is we try and resolve the issues that were created by Uniswap when it pivoted from V2 to V3. And the main issue was that, you know, they added constrained liquidity, awesome. They added the ability to have directionality in liquidity provision, fantastic, which can reduce impermanent loss if you know what you're doing. But knowing what you're doing is being a market maker. Right. So they said, cool, Uniswap V1, V2, you can provide liquidity across the whole entire curve. Amazing. Everyone could be a liquidity provider. It wasn't profitable. Being an LP was not as good as being a market maker. DeFi was not better than traditional finance and not achieved its goals. So they launched V3 to pretty much create a range-based order book. Great, constrained liquidity. But that went right back to being a market maker. So to be, you know, to make profits as a liquidity provider, given that most take on significant impermanent loss, and then a permanent loss is just that, I guess, because of the fact that LP positions are quoted in USD, when there's a series of trades coming through on the buy side or the sell side, you have to give up your holdings as that holding goes up. So you aren't exposed to the upside. You're now only exposed to the downside or the, you know, maybe non-movement or neutrality in movement of the quote asset that you've just acquired in that swap of the AMM. So a lot of them take a lot of LPs take on impermanent loss, usually resulting in, I think there was an interesting data point or statistic that in 2 years LPs in ETH DAI pool lost about 60% of what they could have if they were just huddling, right, both sides of the LP position. So that is a clear indication that LPing didn't get simpler; it got more advanced. You know, so you have all these solutions coming out with like active liquidity managers, you know, Arrakis Finance, Gamma, there's heaps and heaps, but none of them actually are built into the layer of the DEX, you know, even with Uniswap V4 hooks, it still makes it a bit more complicated to add in direct active liquidity management at the bottom layer. And there's now DEXs that are doing it, but they all do it algorithmically to keep it, you know, more decentralized and given that AI can't be set up in a decentralized way. But yeah, so the unique thing is that we use machine learning on this new layer 2 network, which can support gas abstractions, and I'm sure we'll speak a bit more about that soon, as I'm pretty sure you spoke to Roy from Lightleak recently, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, so we can support unparalleled capital efficiency and directionality because we pretty much now offer the infrastructure that market makers would be using in terms of how they calculate inventory, the different models that are being used and mapped onto order books to AMMs. So we get to improve the liquidity provider experience, hence make more for LPs. Obviously, when you make more for LPs, you lose from the traders. It's a zero-sum game, but we've built a pretty cool tokenomics model to further incentivize traders to close up that gap.
So what does that trading experience kind of look like for people that are on the platform? You know, whether it's a novice trader, someone that's just coming in, they're swapping a couple things, they're playing around with it, versus someone that is, you know, a professional, they're a pro, they know exactly what they're doing, they want to adjust everything. They want to use limit orders. They want to, you know, get into the weeds of it. You know, how much can you cater to both sides of that equation?
Yeah, amazing question. I mean, there's, you know, everyone's building for the next billion users of Web3, but they aren't coming. So you got to look at what's in front of you now, right? And in front of us, there's great traders who, you know, trade fire started at uni or have some background or experience doing this. And there's your basic traders, right? So what we are offering in our version 2 of Electric coming out into mainnet around late February of 2024 is a pro trader and a, you know, light version, right? And the light version is essentially just a more customizable version of the Uniswap V3 interface to the extent that you can see charts, you can see candles, you can change timelines for, you know, candles or for the actual chart, and then just basic trading where you have, you know, what you want to buy, what you can sell for it, and just facilitating trades as, along with very basic limit orders. We have our own UX team that does a lot of data collection to determine what's the best approach to creating the most, not necessarily the most advanced, but more advanced trading tools for the most simple users. So we have this in our light mode. And then for our pro traders, we have a really, really cool interface. I mean, in my view, the issue with a lot of DEXs and the reason that they don't get as much adoption within DeFi as they could compared to using SEXs and you know, centralized exchanges, is because there's not as much data focused on AMMs and LPs. So what we've done is we've gone through every main and you know, influential data point that can be written about or denoted for LPs and AMMs, and created a Glassnode experience where you can customize your interface of data. For example, if you're an LP, you can initially take on the default LP set of data points. That might be LVR, who's getting the most fees, the largest liquidity providers in the pool, and we have a lot more that we'll be announcing over the following weeks with blog posts on our Medium. But you could also have for traders, where it's saying what slippage you'll take, what a dynamic fee would be like, where your profitability is going to, how likely you are to win this trade. Certain things that an AMM would focus on, but most data providers should focus on what works in TradFi and then mapping it onto DeFi, which doesn't really make sense because, you know, we don't live in a skeuomorphic society. So then, as well as that, as well as having all this data tailored towards LPs and traders on an AMM, we also have, because we're, again, built on a network that can support gasless abstractions, and hence we can cover the gas for our users, we can do limit orders. Because, for example, if you know, if you're placing a limit order on a DEX and have to pay $2 in gas to replace the order, that's a huge friction point. But we can do it for free. When you can do it for free, you can create trailing limit orders. So, for example, you want to take a take profit or a stop loss, but you want to continuously move down with the price or move up with the price, you know, then you can do trailing limit orders, which is quite cool. When you can do limit orders, which is being achieved through what we call an abstracted AMM, because we have layers on top of the AMM that can allow for limit orders to be executed and called upon when necessary, you can do TWAPs. Right, so we're able to achieve time-weighted average price orders, which is quite cool for large traders. And we are also going to be deploying a zero-knowledge-based private mempool on Lightlink to be able to facilitate ZK-based iceberg orders. And that's quite unique because most dApps can't do that now unless you're on like, you know, a private network like Aztec that also can support smart contracts. But it's not being done in our capacity where we remain fully compatible with it with the EVM, but can push through trades by using this ZK mempool.
Nice, man.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I really like the customizability behind the data and the analysis you can do for charts. For a trader, is there an ability to submit or publish those strategies maybe that are put together on top of Electric? Like, have you guys thought about maybe creating like some kind of like community or board for that?
This far we haven't, because we want to actually transition into a DAO as soon as we can. Mm-hmm. And that DAO transition will, I mean, fundamentally enable us to let the community take charge. My view on those things is that they don't work because there's too many friction points. There's too many evolving strategies. You know, you look at things like eToro, that's done well, but they have consistently added in more trading tools, more tokens with crypto, more stocks, more, you know, equities and all these different things, because their actual business model of relying on follow a trader didn't work that well. you get my point. So if the community wants to do it in the future, great, but for me as a founder, I don't see that as a successful or long-term, and by long-term I mean even 3 years long-term, business model.
Got it. What about in terms of trading fees? I know for a lot of traders, obviously that is the main thing that dictates what platform they actually use and what they trade and how they trade.
Yeah.
How do you guys, you know, keep those fees as low as possible, and what options do you guys offer?
So to keep the fees low, I mean, similar to V3, we just have three different fee tiers, and more can be added in with community votes. There'll be, again, like V3, 100 bips or 1%. There'll be, 30 bips, and then 0.01%, right? So all these different fee tiers, obviously, they kind of relate to different structures. So for example, if you're trading stable coins, you can have way, way, way lower slippage and lower fees. And then if you're trading a more volatile asset, or maybe two volatile assets, where one's a quote, you know, like for example, obviously, wrap Bitcoin and ETH is not that volatile anymore. But, you know, two meme coins, for example, that you do it in the 100 bips fee tier. But one thing that we're working on inside of our vote escrowed tokenomics model is rebates for traders. What's cool about Lightlink, and I recommend everyone listening to go listen to the podcast that Brandon hosted with Roy of Lightlink, is they have a lot of enterprises on their chain, and a lot of these enterprises have users, and all these users want tokens. So all these enterprises are launching tokens. But when you don't have a DEX, you can't have trading value. You can't have value, right? Trading allows for value and liquidity. And because of that, we're in a cool spot that we can take the model that's been used by Velodrome on Optimism, which is only driven by BD. It's just successful BD has allowed Velodrome to grow as much as they have. So where we're going to say to all the enterprises, hey, we want you to be creating a positive flywheel for your own liquidity pool. And the way we do that is by saying, allocate, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5K in your own token every week to a bribery, a bribery campaign or incentives. And then that goes out to traders as rebates, pretty much, based on a weekly epoch. And what's awesome about that, and I mentioned a positive flywheel, is that if you have traders getting rebates for trading to this liquidity pool, you then have the fee that we mentioned earlier being pushed through more frequently.
When that fee goes through, you then have the subsequent LP reward going higher. So traders come through more because they're getting higher rebates. Then LPs come in more because they're getting higher trading LP fees, and that kind of builds a flywheel of a better trading environment with lower slippage and greater depth. So trading is the same as Uniswap. However, by using an incentive campaign on top of it and good BD, as we have with, you know, all these connections through Lightlink, we're in a cool spot to be able to reward traders for using certain pools.
In terms of, you know, what you can trade on top of Electric, You know, is it built on top of the Ethereum blockchain? Can you trade Ethereum tokens and Ethereum assets, or are you also, you know, tapped into other chains as well? Like, what's the breadth of trading possibilities here for those that come to Electric and they're doing swaps? You know, they're a pro trader. They want to take advantage of, you know, different opportunities. What's available to them?
Yeah, so we're in a spot where we are going with Lightlink, right? And their bridge. So they're working on a lot of partnerships with new bridges. And as new bridges come about, there'll be more liquidity. And more liquidity means more liquidity pools. And that means we can facilitate more trades and more tokens, right? Mm-hmm. For now, at launch especially, we'll only be launching with a few pools because we're kind of, you know, we're having a soft launch this Monday. We don't want to try and blow down the gates from the start. We want to build it up naturally and organically, with focusing more on the BD side for our enterprises and building towards that pro trader interface. Importantly, though, there will be ETH. We are building on an Ethereum compatible, EVM compatible network, Lightlink, and through that we are able to instantly have ETH. We'll also have stable coins. We'll have a number of other layer 2 networks, tokens, for example, Matic and Arbitrum and Optimism, and Link and some other key tokens. Eventually, when, as I mentioned, when there's more bridges, it'll be easier to bring more people in. But up until that point, no, we'll stick with just basic assets at the beginning and expand as we see fit.
Okay. And then in terms of where people can, you know, use Electric, is it only in the browser at the moment? Is there a Chrome extension? Is there a mobile application? How do you imagine people, you know, using this going forward?
So right now it's just a web app. Okay. It's on the, when we launch, it'll be on the iPhone and on the desktop. Again, as I mentioned earlier, we're going to have a DAO, and the DAO will have the ability to execute and use a lot of the funding that we have from our tokenomics allocated towards the foundation. If they want to build a wallet on an app, so be it. Again, to me, that makes no financial or business sense because it's so challenging to build it and only works at a certain size. Look at MetaMask, look at 1inch. Even this week, MetaMask was temporarily removed from the App Store. You know, that says something about the difficulty in you know, combining standards of crypto and encryption. Just as a side point, like look at the Solana phone with the Apple iOS or operating systems for Android and Google iPhones. Yeah.
Do you think that limits the reach of potential user base not being able to have in a type of mobile application? I feel like that's something that's plagued this industry for quite a while, is everything being on desktop and not on mobile, or at least as efficiently.
100%. Agreed. However, our main focus is pro traders. We facilitate both sides of it, but we usually target pro traders. And I don't really foresee a future where pro traders will be frequently using apps on their phone or on their iPad. Yeah, but your point for most DEXs is completely valid, and that's a key. I mean, there's one of the many issues in our industry.
Exactly. I mean, to be fair, I don't use it very much or anything on my phone when it comes to Web3. I mean, there's some things I'd like optionality for. You know, maybe for like in wallet. Swaps, you know.
Yep.
But other than that, you know, when I really want to trade something, I'm always on my desktop. Like, I don't trust my phone. Like, I want to make sure the orders are set right. I want to make sure I can use the studies and look at the chart. So I guess there's a vulnerability
on your phone, right? Because if you're doing it through, if you're at home on a laptop, it's your Wi-Fi, right? If you're doing it on your phone, there is a lot more risk of, you know, all these SIM swap attacks that have been taking place with friends tech, with certain data being stolen. You know, your encryption keys can be taken very easily, especially if you keep it as a record on your phone or caching stuff on your phone. So it's sort of, you know, if you're looking at that as a quick rabbit hole or a bit of a tangent, like there's a reason that there hasn't been as much adoption on phones, because technically it's more risky. If you're looking at it as a developer building for these things, you have to make the trade-off of more adaptability and usability and a better UX at the cost of a better security level, right? Which is why now with the new Ethereum improvement proposal for account abstraction, it could be easier. But again, you have to look at the Lily effect and say, well, how long has it been around for? Is it a recognized standard in the industry yet? No. So, you know, use a bit of caution.
Got it. And then before this, you also mentioned that you guys are integrating airdrops into Electric as well. Curious, you know how that will work out and function, and you know how you see that kind of panning out.
Yeah, I mean, airdrops are a great way to bootstrap communities. You know, that's generally the main utility, if I'm being honest, apart from like gas tokens for networks, which actually makes sense because it's anti-spam proof. Or as I mentioned with Ethereum, it can create a value for data, or the data can form a value of the token. But yeah, so we're using an airdrop to bring users in, and it kind of goes hand in hand with our airdrop economy to continue and preserve the value. But our airdrop is multifaceted. It has four stages. We're currently in the first phase, and that's going to end with a $1 million airdrop based on liquidity we're putting into the pool on our exchange, obviously on Electric. But what we are targeting on and what we're focusing on is for the first phase, socials. Right, socials, testnet usage, and getting more eyes on the DEX. It's very simple. We have a live Galaxy campaign that will be changing a little bit as we look to make it more, just more attractive. That's the first phase, social. And the edge up for the social isn't as heavily focused as on a token, because there's no token yet. We're doing our TGE in February along with our V2 mainnet launch. But we are doing an NFT collection, and the NFTs will have many utilities that, like, you know, it's a way of building community stronger, building a strong community, I guess, in the sense that you can, have reduced trading fees. You can have access to different Discord groups, to alpha, to taking on a more active role as an ambassador, giveaways, conversations with the founding team, or relying on our network for more people, a bunch of different things that all, primarily relate to how to give a community member a better experience and get them like in and sticky. So that's the first part of the airdrop. Phase two is focused much more heavily on liquidity providers. Because if you're thinking about, like, I know that there's like this perennial discussion around what's the real customer of a DEX. Is it the liquidity provider or is it the trader? Our view is it's a liquidity provider. And then you try and build financial designs around keeping traders there for a long period of time, as well as the fact that you're having a better interface. For example, with our Pro interface, it can have the customizable data focused on LPs and AMMs. So the second phase focuses on LPing. So obviously, you know, we're using a points-based system on Galaxy. So you can trade, you get points. You can interact, you get points. You can provide liquidity, you get the most points. And obviously, we're going to have a higher incentive in terms of points allocated towards LP or pool, sorry, with our token, as well as trading on pools with our token. So that's phase two. Phase three is very similar, but rather than emphasizing liquidity providers, we emphasize traders. And then phase four is a mystery stage. We aren't announcing it yet, but I can say as a bit of an alpha leak, there will undoubtedly be a connection between phase one, two, and three with four. The last thing that's cool to think about is, you know, we spent a lot of time thinking about a game theory of creating a good airdrop, and we've come out with two approaches to claiming the token. The first approach is quite simple. It's just an activity-based approach. So, for example, if you have, you know, received 1,000 or 2,000 USD in Electric tokens, you have to push through 10 times that amount of volume on the exchange to claim it. This isn't challenging. I mean, you know, if you're looking at pushing liquidity, you can go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. You can wash trade. I mean, wash trading on a DEX isn't as bad as it is on a centralized exchange, because there are fees. There is a spam-proof technique. Hence, you have to have an incentive, which is the airdrop. And the other way that we're much more proud of is we call it permadrop. And permadrop is a approach to, it's sort of like lock drop, but fundamentally what happens is post you claim the airdrop, you claim it into an NFT, right? And when claiming into an NFT, you have the unique ability on an interface to delegate the underlying tokens. So for example, you might want to lend it out to a money market. You might want to lock it into our escrow economy. You might want to provide liquidity on pool A, pool B, pool C, whatever. So you have all these different things you can do with our token, and we let you do those things. However, it's stuck and only able to be delegated from the NFT interface. You can't sell it. The way it works is we want to keep users, you know, interested in using the protocol without selling a token. So if you after 100 days want to unlock the tokens and sell them, you can. But if you want to restake it, you'll get a 1.1x multiplier on the next 100 days. So what we'll do is 100 days after, if you've received in yield from the underlying tokens, you've received maybe 15K worth of Logic tokens or 15K of just yield, it could be whatever, we'll give you an extra 10% on that. If you lock it up for another 100 days, you'll get 20%. If you do it for, and then it starts to decrease. If you do it for 30 days, you get it for 1.25x, so 25%, then 30%, 40%, and it ends at 50%. So it's a cool way of thinking about keeping users in, giving them utility for the tokens that they can hold, whilst using emissions in the tokenomics to ensure that it's game theoretically sound.
You also mentioned something called DLP earlier, and I believe you mentioned it was something that had to do with language models and DeFi, some combination between that. But you tell me more. What is DLP?
So DLP stands for Dynamic Liquidity Provision. This is our key USP of the DEX, and something that we can only achieve on Lightlink, again, because we can abstract away gas and cover it for our users. The way that DLP works is, as I mentioned earlier, as a key differentiator, we use a machine learning model, which I'll get into in a moment, to provide liquidity across the liquidity curve, changing it periodically at 3-minute intervals because we can have no gas fees, which would normally really screw up this model. And make intelligent predictions to be able to ensure liquidity providers can be directional, right? Again, as I mentioned before, Uniswap V3 and concentrated liquidity allows for directed liquidity provision, which is awesome, but it doesn't make the assumption that the users know which direction to place liquidity into, right? And if you do know for 5 minutes or for 5 hours or for 5 weeks, people often won't come back and change it because it's called passive liquidity provision. You know, that's what most people inherently do. So the way that DLP works, and this is quite interesting and hasn't been done before. In my opinion, there's been no, thus far, apart from focusing on oracles and security, there's been no interaction or intersection between AI or machine learning and DeFi. But what we do is we use what's called a meta-heuristic AI. And this meta-heuristic AI is in control of 98 different agents. And each of these agents have been trained on a different set of data. So for example, one agent might be trained in high volatility. One will be low volatility. One could be high volume, one low volume. One high volatility, one low volatility. And whatever's in between, and whatever other factors we identify based on this model. And what the meta AI or meta heuristic AI will do is it will have the power to give weightings to each of the different AI agents that have been trained, and determine which will be most relevant for the market conditions in front of it now. Then what we do is we combine each of the data points and each of the different weightings for each of the agents. So for example, it might be 10% high volatility, 20% high volatility, 30% positive sentiment, and whatever else. I'm just making things up now. And we'll make a prediction for every possible price. And this is where it gets interesting. We want to hedge ourselves across the entire liquidity curve. We don't want to be vulnerable to a black swan event, right? That's the worst thing you can have when using AI and making binary price predictions. We don't want to be binary. So what our model does is it makes predictions for every possible price that can occur on the price curve, on the liquidity curve, and then adds in an extra dimension, which is the likelihood or the probability of that price becoming true, that path happening, you know? So we're pretty much trying to say, this is where, I'll do it this way, it's mirrored. This is where the price is now. We're going to say that there can be a price going this way, and this way, and this way, and this way, and every possible way. And then we weight each of those paths, right? Based on that weighting, we'll provide liquidity on the curve at that concentration. So for example, if we have in an ETH dipole, if we make a prediction that there's a 12% likelihood of it being 1.4K, right? 15% likelihood of it being 1.41, 30% likelihood of it being 1.42, and so on and so forth, with 0.01% chance of it being at 0K, or, you know, 0.1K, and then a 0.00010 chance of it being at, infinity, like in the V2 model. We'll provide liquidity based on those concentrations. Obviously, we're going to have some margin. So, for example, if it's lower than 0.01%, we won't put any liquidity there because that would be just wasting rebalancing fees. But beyond that, it allows us to have liquidity where we anticipate the price most to be, along the liquidity curve, And also be hedged for where else it could go, right? And that's the differentiator, which is we're hedged. We can reduce impairment loss by taking directionality. We can increase liquidity provider fees because we are constantly moving them around. And then obviously when you have more liquidity where the price is going to be, you have a better trading environment. So you can provide lower slippage, greater depth, and a much better trader experience for the pro traders that are making trades at a large size, potentially using TWAPs or iceberg orders, without facing severe slippage.
This is really cool stuff. What do you think about the future of language models, AI, you know, within the blockchain space, you know, working, you know, whether it's in DeFi or another niche? It seems like a really good combination of two technologies that can seem to really benefit each other.
A little while ago, I said that to a friend, and he sent me a long article about a dystopian future where AI and blockchain are combined, where the AI completely gets autonomous and gets all the power and autonomy and just completely rules the world and ruins the world. It's a very interesting read. So yes, but also people just try and do it because it's two big buzzwords that are, you know, one's dead. The Bitcoin, the blockchain buzzword is dead at the moment because we're in a typical bear market. And AI, which is slowly, the bubble is slowly popping, slowly, in terms of valuations and deal flow going into it. I see a future. However, I find it hard to reconcile the centralized nature of AI, which is almost required to be centralized unless you can build a blockchain focused on AI, which would be crazy expensive. Because again, think about this, right? If you want to have a blockchain that's decentralized, you have to have validators, miners, stakers, whatever you want to do. And to incentivize them to be validators, be stakers, you have to give them some token, some reward. And then to prevent spam transactions, you have to have gas fees, right? But AI or machine learning is run on so much data and so many different happening at the same time. But to do that on the blockchain is like presently, in my opinion, theoretically and practically impossible. So there are synergies with security, as I mentioned, with oracles, 100%. You can have for DAOs, you can have a judge, right? A judge and an executioner who is not driven by a council, because councils and governments hasn't worked yet. Despite what people say, you know, cyber attacks are too prevalent. There's no way of valuing expertise. There's no way of saying who's better to make a decision here. There's no way of valuing, there's no way of finding selling points between what people would agree on. So governance has failed. If you do it with the judge and AI, it could work. But again, putting that power into a self-executing AI is problematic. You know, you've seen what's happened with self-executing DAOs, where when the proposition goes through, rather than a dev team working on it, the change goes through instantly. And that's resulted in heaps of scams, heaps of attacks, heaps of vulnerabilities have been, you know, highlighted from that approach. So, you know, the most simple answer is no. The best, in my opinion, the best way of looking at it could be language models, as you said, being used to simplify the UX of crypto. That could make sense. You can have the AI interacting with, I know Avalanche is looking at doing this, you know, the AI interacting with the blockchain, AI stands here and the users are where I am, and I can deal with a nice interface because the AI's role is to translate their complexities of blockchains, protocols, dApps, whatever, and make it just really simple and readable, and that could work. And the most simple version of that would be, I want to describe a sophisticated trade, but I don't know what tools to use. You know, maybe I have to hedge my risk with an option. I want to take on, a certain position on a liquidity curve. I want to buy this token here. I want to sell this one here. You know, whatever. I'm making these up now. But you can describe that in a sentence, as I've terribly done, and the AI model would translate that sentence into a trade, right? People have been speaking about this for so long, and it hasn't come into fruition yet. So maybe it can be done. That's very risky, putting that much power with AI to make trades that you wouldn't understand and putting your money in that. So there's quite big vulnerabilities and problems to look into. You can never approach these things with too much positivity and optimism. But yeah, I mean, yes and no.
What do you think about the future, I guess the current state of the crypto industry right now? I mean, obviously we're in a bear market, we go through cycles, we're in the middle of the bottom point in a cycle right now. You know, eventually things will come back, but you know, what do you think the future is here for crypto as we, you know, head into the next few years? You know, is it going to be much like what we saw in 2020, 2021, in 2017, in 2018? You know, is it going to be like hype and frenzy and scams and Ponzi's, or do you think we're going to get to the point where, you know, it's very institutionally invested in, there's a lot of really good products and use cases, users, common everyday users are getting onboarded? Like, do you see that the future we want, or do you think it's going to be, you know, this continuous cycle?
We're on an S-curve, right? We're currently in a very saturated industry where, as I mentioned, we have this principle of creative destruction taking place, where you can innovate with 5% and it's better, and the other one is fucked up, it's finished, unless you have good tokenomics and good financial designs. So in that sense, there'll be scams, there'll be hype, there'll be terrible projects coming through until we reach that point of the S-curve where we have adoption, right? I am of the opinion that the next bull market will be the biggest because of the things that you mentioned, because institutions are looking to get involved, because there's ways for them to get involved, because things like Fireblocks and Chainalysis have, you know, institutional and government and regulatory adoption and eyes on them that they all agree this works. So there's ways to do it. Regs are changing. They'll keep changing and they'll keep being shit and they'll take a very long time. But I can see this being the next and the largest bull market and the last big one, which is sad, but it kind of, that's the way that S-curves work. There will be scams, there will be hype. Anytime there's a way to make money, whenever there's uninformed liquidity, uninformed traders, uninformed buyer pressure, there's going to be people capturing that like, you know, nascent and newbie liquidity, we'll say, right? So that's a fact of life. You can apply that, unfortunately, to anything, but usually there's more regulations around preventing it. And I don't think the regulatory environment is advanced enough to find uniform solutions to stopping scams, especially when they can't find, you know, a standard that they want everyone to abide by, you know. So there's problems and problems on problems and on layers of problems to resolve. But yeah, I mean, I see the future changing positively for crypto. I think when crypto isn't the word that people are talking about, fantastic, that's when we're going to have adoption. I don't say, hey, I'm using the Apple iOS system all the time, you know. That doesn't make sense. The Apple iOS all the time. Yeah, so we'll see. I think there's a lot of friction points. No change in really solving it well. Like recently, a few of my friends were giving me a preach about how Cosmos is the most user-friendly chain. And I spent like a friend of mine spent about 12 hours bridging to Terra to capture some shitty like yield strategy that, you know, he had to buy gas in exchange, send it to the wallet, make three new wallets. Like, come on, that's not good. Where's the argument that's good? So everyone has to say crypto for your grandmother, that's probably bullshit, but, you know, keep working towards a high standard, right?
Exactly. I mean, I love the enthusiasm and the communities that are built throughout this industry. It's not like there's these passionate communities, you know, around automobiles or rockets being launched into space or, you know, health tech. You know, blockchain is a very unique technology where you have these niche communities that are just very outgoing and passionate and vocal. And I do think that that helps with driving capital towards innovation. But at the same time, the user interface is terrible across the industry. I've gone to so many different conferences and there's a lot of great technology, but you can't use it, or it takes too long, or it's just, there's so many different ways people can screw up and lose their money or get hacked. There's bottlenecks, and it's definitely something that needs to improve.
Great. And that will be the right direction. One of the first times where it's actually driven by technology and not the opportunity to make a quick buck.
Exactly. You guys have a mainnet coming up on Monday, correct?
Yes.
So yeah. What's that going to entail for you guys here on your roadmap?
This is a soft launch. We want to get out there for the benefit of the Lightlink users, the benefit of the enterprises, and the benefit of DeFi on Lightlink, right? It'll be, as I mentioned, a soft launch. You know, you'll be able to trade a few liquidity pools that will be seeding along with the enterprises that will be creating liquidity pools. Definitely recommend checking it out. We have an airdrop going on, as I mentioned. Lightlink has an airdrop going on as well. So there'll be a double Wombo combo to get a double airdrop, which is pretty unique. It therefore means providing liquidity on Electric, for example, is significantly more profitable than most DEXs are, because as well as the fact that we have a lot of incentives for traders, we have a lot of incentives for liquidity providers. So we can guarantee trading volume coming through, as well as liquidity yield, as well as airdrop campaign from Electric, as well as airdrop campaign from Lightlink. So there's a lot of value to be made now by being early. Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Awesome, man. I'm looking forward to it. Where can people go to check out Electric in the meantime? You know, they want to get some more information. They want to find social media profiles. Do you have a community? Where would you direct people?
Definitely to our Twitter. That's the top of the funnel for almost everybody. It's at Electric Network. We have an awesome Discord with heaps of moderators. We have different ambassador program tiers. So if you want to get more involved, there's scope to make money, to get tokens, to be in the running for giveaways. And yeah, I definitely recommend checking out a few articles that we've written on the Defiant about the airdrop and about, as I mentioned, our key USP, DLP, or dynamic liquidity provision.
Awesome. If people want to find you online, do you have social media, LinkedIn? Mm-hmm. You know, what's the best place for people to connect with you and chat?
Definitely on Twitter. I think my name, I'm pretty sure it's OXDGENZ. So it's OXDEGENZ.
Okay, perfect. Nathan, thanks for taking the time to come on, man. It's been a really good episode. A lot of great information as well on what you guys are doing with Electric in terms of it being a DEX and, you know, what separates you guys. And I'm very excited for your guys' mainnet to come out, that soft launch, and then everything else you develop on your roadmap. So keep in touch, man, and maybe we'll follow up with another episode in the future.
Let's do it. Looking forward to it. Thank you for the time.